Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And joining me here in the studio is Chicago mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot.
Thank you so much for coming in. Yeah, my pleasure to be here, Rick.
And I'm kind of jealous. You told me you were out with your daughter at the on the field at Wrigley yesterday.
Yeah, it was really a fantastic experience. The kids had a great time. Got to see their faces on the big screen and just play on the field, which was great, and go into the dugout.
And she's 10, right?
She's 10 years old, yes.
Yeah, so when I was 10, there wasn't any video board. And that was a long time ago, too. I'm not even sure there was Ivy then. No, yeah. I'm kidding. thank you so much for coming in. And in this huge field,
yes.
I mean, one, obviously, I think, you know, it represents some discontent with mm-hmm. the current leadership. Mm-hmm. But how do you stake out yourself in a crowded field?
Well, you know, obviously in any campaign, whether there's a crowded field or it's a smaller field, you want to seek ways that you can get your messaging out to the people and distinguish yourself. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing, regardless of who is in or who's not in. You know, I think that what is clear to me is that Chicago's going the wrong direction. And in looking at the folks that I've talked to over many years now, it's also very clear to me that they want a different direction for the city. And so what we're going to be talking about is offering a new progressive course for the city, getting rid of the us versus them mentality and style of governance that frankly has dominated for too long and certainly over the last 7 years, and really focusing on bringing people to the table at the front of a process and not at the back end of process. So we're going to be talking about, for example, the fact that taxes are too high in our city. The fact that we are the only metropolitan area in the country that's losing population ought to be a sense of urgency. To me, it's the proverbial canary in the mine shaft. So we've got to start talking about it and looking at that issue so that we can keep our core population in middle class and lower income folks. We've got to look at, obviously, the violence issue is something that I think a lot of people for a while thought, well, this is really not affecting me, but I'm hearing from people now all over the city and some of the frankly most posh areas of the city who are saying, we're afraid, we're concerned, what's going on? What can we do about that? And the answer there is really twofold. Obviously, law enforcement has a role to play, and we've got to do everything we can to make sure that our police department continues to engage in constitutional policing. But the other part of it is violence is a symptom. It is a symptom of a community under duress, under stress. And looking at what's going on in way too many neighborhoods in our city, you see a dearth of resources. We see way too many of our kids living in poverty. We see individuals who are experiencing generational unemployment at numbers 30, 40, and in some instances 50% that resemble the third world and not one of the most global cities in the world. We see the absence of community anchors like good schools and churches, community organizations, parks that you can actually go to. We see vacant lots and trash-strewn neighborhoods. The absence of, you name it, food deserts, medical deserts, pharmacy deserts, on and on and on. And what that says to me is we have to have a comprehensive plan to uplift neighborhoods, to build up our small business core. And frankly, that's what's lacking, and the leadership is lacking. And that's one of the things not only we're going to be talking about, but we're going to offer detailed plans to address that.
You touched on the fact about gun violence mm-hmm. being not just the province of certain areas anymore,
right.
But now, have we kind of reached a tipping point on that issue of gun violence where before people would kind of segment it off to
yeah.
areas of the city that now it's people everywhere in the city?
No, I think that this is an issue now that reverberates with people in every neighborhood in our city. Now, look, the fact that we've had so many young people killed, you know, we're now talking in the news about the tragic shooting at the school just outside of Houston, which, of course, is a tragedy. But the reality is, whether it's in Houston, whether it's in Parkland or elsewhere, we're having that kind of body count, that kind of tragedy that destroys individuals and families and communities on at least a monthly basis, if not sooner. So It's something that...
Sometimes a weekly basis.
Sometimes, unfortunately, a weekly basis. It should shock the consciousness of all of us. But now what we see is people feeling the effects of violence creeping into neighborhoods that it wouldn't necessarily traditionally creep into. But regardless, this is an issue that affects all of us as Chicagoans, and we have to dig down deep and compel the folks who are responsible for this to have a real, meaningful plan. It's got to be multi-tiered. Clearly, law enforcement has a role to play. But even if the Chicago Police Department and our federal partners were operating at full capacity, which I think there's still many areas in which they should be much more unified and a strategy to deal with the guns that are flowing over our borders from Indiana, from, frankly, Mississippi and other states. And we'll talk specifically about how to deal with that. You got to also use your smarts and soft power. And that's why digging in and having a comprehensive plan to uplift neighborhoods and communities. That is, we don't call that violence reduction, but it has that effect.
Well, and I think everybody does understand there is that economic component that exists, a lack of opportunity, that helps feed the crime problem.
Right.
But where does government fit into that?
Well, I think that in that regard, government has and I'll just say specifically, city government and a mayor should be taking the lead on that issue. We have a tremendous amount of resources in the city, as you well know. Literally world-class resources at the neighborhood level, in the academy, in business, in philanthropic community, the civil rights community. What we need, though, is a leader who can be a convener of those resources. And I say this all the time. The governor and the mayor said, 600 people all in for Amazon. You know, and God bless, I hope we do get Amazon, but I'd still like to know what was the deal that we offered Amazon. But imagine if we harness something like that, that kind of talent, to address the violence that's happening, economic development, the lack of opportunity and jobs. That is the critical role that a mayor and a real leader should play in bringing people together on the at the table to help address and solve these problems. And when I go out and I talk to different groups and I talk to people who I know are subject matter experts on a range of these issues, I always ask them, is anybody from the mayor's office been in contact with you? Has anybody from the mayor's office ever asked you to do X, Y, or Z, or to find out about what you're doing? And almost universally, the answer is no. That's a mistake. That is a lost opportunity, and it's not one that I'm going to squander.
That's Lori Lightfoot. She is a mayoral candidate for the city of Chicago. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and I'm joined here in studio by Lori Lightfoot, who is a candidate for Chicago mayor, talking about her campaign. One of the things you touched on before the break was the issue of being overtaxed
yes,
in the city. Of course, tax is always a big concern, but there are, you know, we're on the hook for things to pay for, you know, pensions, you know, and infrastructure. How would you adjust the tax system?
Well, look, what I've been saying about the taxes is they're regressive, which means, in effect, that the secretary is paying the same tax rate as the CEO. And, of course, that makes no sense. And I think that's what makes people upset. Everyone knows that government has to function, and it has to function with revenue. But what I think we need to do, though, Rick, is this. We need to understand what the true magnitude of the financial challenge is. And we don't know that. There's not been nearly enough transparency around that. And we've got to get our fiscal house in order. I mean, every day we see a screaming headline about literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars that have been squandered through race, whether it's lawsuits, which there seems to be no accountability for, whether it's overtime for this or that entity that blows through the prescribed budget, whether it's mistakes that are being made in court, whether it's the red light camera overtime settlement. What that says to me is that, and I know from my own experience with city government, there is nobody who's focused on making sure that we identify and mitigate risk. The Inspector General recommended, I think over a year ago, that the city actually hire and employ and empower a risk manager. Now, imagine this, the city government, right, this tens of billions of dollars that are being spent every single year. Can you imagine any business that would not have a risk manager and a unit that is focused on mitigating risk? And yet that's where we are in Chicago, which of course makes no sense. So one of the first things I will do when I'm elected mayor is to empower and hire a risk manager. Now, even if you cut out all the fraud, waste, and abuse that's going on in city government, that's not going to get you enough revenue to address this huge looming pension problem that by statute now has got to be paid up in 2020 and I think again in 2023. But we can't talk to people about revenue until we can demonstrate to them that we have taken the seriousness of making sure that we don't squander their precious tax dollars. And that is not happening now and hasn't happened over the last 7 years, and we've got to have a significant course correction on that. And on pensions, look, there is no magic solution. If there was a magic solution, all the efforts that have been tried by many, many people over these last few years would change that around. But in Chicago in particular, the one thing that we have to do, again, is make sure that we're using the best in practice investment policies, one in which we don't pay a lot of high fees and get little return. And that's what we've seen over the last few years, making projections that we're never going to meet. And that's a problem. And that is, again, not maximizing the opportunity to really generate principal in our investment funds. So that's something that we actually have to turn around as well.
So are you saying that the rate of return that these actuarial assumptions the city uses are based on inflated expectation of
yes.
rate of return?
They miss their marks year after year after year, and that's a problem. So what that says to me is twofold. Either we're not making the right assumptions, or that we're using an investment strategy that is outdated. You know, one of the things that we will be looking at, we'll be talking about this in more detail as the campaign rolls on, you know, investment in pension funds is something that is done by every state, a lot of municipalities across the country. There's a lot that we can learn from the best in class from those different pension funds, and making sure that we're using proven strategies that maximize the return and lower the fees. I don't think we're doing that in Chicago, and we've got to get to that place.
You announced your campaign on Friday afternoon, announced receiving over $240,000 in contributions, kind of a...
Reportable contributions,
reportable.
$270,000 all
right.
in.
Right, but kind of a sign of, mm-hmm. of moving forward with your campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a cost of entry into running for this.
No doubt about it.
And I think in that unfortunately, money is a show of strength in the way...
It's a test of viability.
Yeah, but is it fair? I mean, is our campaign finance system fair?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's not. It's badly out of whack. It was out of whack before the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. It's out of whack here in Illinois. We look at a gubernatorial election that's probably going to break national records in the amount of money that's spent, probably way in excess of $200 million, which is unbelievable. And look, Rahm raised $25 million to... you know, limp over the finish line against Chewy. I would expect he's going to blow through that number by a considerable margin. But what I hear from people is they're sick of the money in politics. Now, you can't unilaterally disarm, right? You've got to have enough money to be viable, to get your message out. But I do think that the gross amounts of money that we're being seen raised on all sorts of level is going to be a storyline in this case. I favor some kind of public finance. You know, we've got, for example, a big push for an elected school board, which I favor. We've got a big push for some kind of election body to oversee the Chicago Police Department. And we can talk about whether or not what form that should take and whether or not that makes sense. But the question that we have to answer in all of those, let's have an elected this or elected that, how do we make sure that average citizens who are interested in governance actually have the ability to have access? Because if as you know, to quote Dan Biss, if it's an auction and not an election. All that's going to do is turn more and more people off. They're going to feel completely estranged from government and elected officials, and they're going to vote by staying home. We need people to be active and engaged in our democracy, and one of the most important pillars, of course, is going and casting your vote. But if they don't feel like elections matter, if they don't feel like the people who are the candidates are actually listening to them and are articulating issues that are relevant to their life, they're not going to engage, and that is highly problematic to our democracy.
Well, and as you mentioned, like with an issue like the elected school board and even an elected police oversight, right, where special interests weigh in, and it's their money that helps drive candidates that, and that influences outcomes.
I have great concerns about that. I'm all for citizen involvement and direct involvement in, for example, oversight of the police department, because we have a $2 billion enterprise that every single day has the ability to dramatically affect the lives of individual citizens. Of course, citizens should have a say in how that entity operates. And again, the devil's in the details, of course, but I don't want to see a circumstance where one interest group versus another has the money and the resources to populate those kinds of boards, and then the true citizen involvement is completely mythical and farcical because individual citizens are shut out. We've got to make sure that we have a system in place so that the average person with a modest amount of resources can actually participate.
Lori, where can people learn more about your campaign?
They can go to our website at lightfootforchicago.com, lightfootforchicago.com. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, or on Instagram.
That's Lori Lightfoot, candidate for Chicago mayor. Thank you so much for joining me here in studio today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.